Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a council meeting on this April 9th, 2012. Beautiful days we've had recently, certainly. And we appreciate you being here. And as we go through our agenda, as we usually do, if you'd like to speak on any of the items, you may certainly do so. And we'll just ask you to hold your conversation to 5 minutes, if you possibly can, so that others will get a chance to speak as well. So let's begin a meeting with a council prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag. Most gracious and sovereign God, we come into your presence this evening with praise and gratitude in our hearts for who you are and for the many blessings you have bestowed on our community. You have greatly blessed us. We give thanks for the opportunity to serve our city, serve on city council, and our citizens who give so willingly to the time and talents that they have to serve our city. We appreciate that so much. We give thanks for our staff that does such a fine job in support of council, working with our citizens to help make Aiken an even better, even finer place to live. Lord, this evening we ask that you would be with us as we discuss the issues before us, and give us the guidance and wisdom that we need to make the decisions that are in the best interest of our citizens and our community. For it's in your holy name we pray, and we give you the honor and the glory. Amen.
Amen. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to our agenda this evening?
Mr. Mayor, at the last meeting, when we discussed the accommodations tax committee allocation, I had recommended that we add $2,000 to the Antiques in the Heart of Aiken. And after the meeting, I was asked to withdraw that request, so I would like to add that to the agenda to withdraw that request. So the only addition will be the $2,000 for the Juneteenth.
Okay, sir. Anything else?
Mayor, I've also received a request from the Cumbie Center. They would like permission to place some ribbons and do a balloon release at the Festival Center. If we could just add that.
Okay.
To the agenda.
All right. Okay. Okay, anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passage unanimously. Do we have a motion and a second for that?
I move.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Okay. Let's vote again. Okay. Passage unanimously. I'm sorry about that. My mistake. The minutes is the next item to discuss on the March 26th regular meeting minutes. Any discussion on this? Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under old business, the first item is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance regarding fiscal 2012-2013 water and sewer rates. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The ordinance is entitled an ordinance establishing new charges for water and sewer service. And as you see from my memo, we are recommending an 8% increase in the water rates. That increase follows increases in 2010, 2008, 2007, 2006, 2003, and 2002. Just in case council may have received some confusing information, just wanted to clarify this evening that with the City of Aiken budget, the water system is an enterprise fund. It's what we call our 002 fund. It's not a general fund account. Surpluses or unspent funds in the general fund account do not affect the utility funds account, because by state law and on the bond that we do have currently issued, that fund is required to support itself. We have recommended this 8% increase in the rate due to 2% of inflation that's predicted for 2012-2013 time frame. The actual cost of living increase was over 3%. Last year we asked for no increase at all. And in addition, Council will recall at the Horizons Retreat that you had a presentation from Larry Morris, who is our Director of Engineering and Utilities. We've experienced a huge uptick in the number of water leaks that have to be serviced in the summertime. One of those locations was Sand Shifter Court that's in the Surrey Woods subdivision. You'll also recall that Mr. Morris showed you a new type of piping that could be used. We actually used that on a pump at one of our pump stations very successfully, so we thought we'd go ahead and try it in Sand Shifter Court. We were averaging at least one call for repair service out there a month. We installed that pipe in January. We've had absolutely no calls back. We replaced all the services on that court. So in addition to having to replace services because the services are coming to the end of their useful life, we want to address this leak problem and do it in the most efficient way. The additional 6% increase will help fund three crews to go around and repair these services, and hopefully with this new type piping so that we can take care of these leaks once and for all. In addition to that, we do have the scheduled replacement for water services, so when this crew is not fixing leaks, they can be installing the new water services. In addition to the rate increase, we also are asking for a proposed new rate for meter and tap costs for 5/8 lines and 1-inch lines. For larger lines, we propose to charge the exact cost of the meter plus the installation charges. You approved this unanimously at your first reading at our last meeting. Again, what staff has tried to do and presented to Mr. Morris's presentation to you at the retreat is come up with an amount that's rationally based on the expected expenses for the new crew and the equipment for them in order to replace these leaks.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. And, of course, you can speak on this. You could have speak on it anyway because of that changed policy where we allow folks to speak on the first and second readings. But before, and I know there are many of you who want to speak on this, Larry, I would like to ask you, if you would, to come forward and explain in your words why you think this is necessary.
You
live with this day in and day out, the leaks and everything else, so it might help.
Yes, sir. And I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm sorry, Leslie, did you have a question?
I was going to ask in his comments if he would state the current rate and how much of an increase it would be so that the record should state what they're currently paying, the 8% increase, and what that equates to.
They're currently paying 92 cents.
Per
100 cubic feet, that's correct, right. 92 cents. And we're asking for an 8% increase in that.
$1.26.
So that what you'll see is that even with the increase, we will still be the second lowest rate in
right.
the entire state.
That's
of
what
South
I wanted
Carolina.
To state for the record.
Yes, sir. Right.
And
we have that slide to put up later at some point.
That would be page
51.
51 and 52.
51, sir.
If you could put that up, please, Ms. Rideout. Page 52.
Or 2.
And there's a little bit of difference in the calculation. The state, for whatever reason, says an average customer is 802 cubic feet per month. And actually, our experience is our average customer is about 800 cubic feet per month. This increase that's proposed will raise their charge about $3.
Can that be turned around a little bit?
I think it can. Can we rotate that?
I thought we had it at our last meeting where it was, you could read it.
Can we click on that icon at the top, Ms. Rideout, to turn the document, please?
I have one I can put on the overhead.
On the projector? I think Mr. Morris has it. Yes, ma'am.
What you'll see is the fact that these other cities that we compete with, 31 other cities, including Aiken, and it shows what their rates are compared to ours. And even with this increase, we're still second from the bottom, or lowest, second lowest. Myrtle Beach is for somehow, they are the lowest, but then Aiken.
And one of the factors in that, Mayor, is they actually have naturally occurring fluoride in their water, so they don't have to fluoridate it in the low country, and that's actually a savings for them.
And what we're looking at here, Mayor, is actually a calculation made by our finance department to show what an average bill would be per month. And I think, Ms. Price, that this kind of helps answer some of that question, too. This is page 52 of your package, and page 51 of the package shows what the calculation would be currently and then what it would be for the average increase, and that is this calculation here. So we were looking at a difference in the monthly bill from $38.06 to $41.06, so basically a $3 per month difference for the 8%.
And my understanding, Mr. Morris, is that the total bill average for the state based on these comparison cities would be more like 55, 56.
That is correct. If we go back to page 52, it does give the comparisons for the state. And if you look at the number of cities that were compared there for the overall total rate, the only city that is lower than us is Myrtle Beach. And I'm not quite sure why they're that much lower than us, but they have a very, very large system with a lot of tourists and a lot of hotels that are on their system. So we are the second lowest in the state.
Mr. Morris, we're not asking for a rate increase based on the rates around the state. That's just comforting to know.
That is correct.
We're asking for the increase because of a need for Aiken.
That is correct. And in my memo to Mr. Pierce on page 53 of your package, I discussed the need for that. Our newest round of sales tax funds, our 017 funds, do not include any funding for service replacement. All of the funds were earmarked to replace our main lines. A good example is the Whiskey Road line, which runs roughly from Ray Lane and goes all the way out to Pine Log Road. We average about 3 breaks a year on that line. It's an old cast iron line. It's well over 50 years old. It needs replacing. So our 017 funds are all earmarked for projects like that. We also have some of the 017 funds earmarked to replace our sewer, our aging sewer infrastructure. And we had presented, of course, the results of our sewer system evaluation survey in Carlson Park, showing the problems that we had up there. So some of those funds are earmarked there. But as far as earmarking for services, there are none. When we look at our personnel, we went back to a base year of 1986 on our personnel. And we've only had a couple of additions to our personnel since 1986. We pride ourselves on trying to stay lean, try to give the best service that we can. I don't feel that it's a good service that we can give if somebody's got to wait 3 to 4 weeks for a leak. And I know that we've had that problem last summer. So what we're asking for are the crews that we could go ahead and address leaks. And instead of trying to patch a leak, to run a new service, to run a new pipe, so we get the same results that we've gotten in Sand Shifter Court, and that's no callbacks. We do not want callbacks. Not only is that very frustrating for our citizens, it's very frustrating for our crews to have to go back on something they just repaired a month or 2 months ago. So this is the reasoning for the new crews. Of course, with new crews, we do have to have them to have equipment and trucks to work with. That money is also included in this 8% rate increase so that we can put them in the field and we can start them working just as soon as we can get them on. I included in our budget this year enough funding to start replacing services. Again, it's not a capital item. It is an operation and maintenance item, and that funding is included in our piping account, our 6200 series account. And Mr. Pierce and I have met on the budget now a couple of times and worked through so that we could start this program if council agrees to provide for the personnel.
Any questions?
If we approve this and you bring on the extra crew members and replace all the leaks, will this mean that we're good for a long time, or will we be revisiting this next year, year after?
The way that we have seen our cost increase, we're seeing a small increase needed about every 2 to 3 years. We have had to ask for some larger increases due to increases on our cost from the PSA for sewer treatment. For 2 years in a row, we did not pass on to our customers any increase in the wastewater treatment cost. And then we had to ask for a much larger increase to try to get ourselves back to even. As an enterprise fund, I cannot borrow from the general fund without coming to council and requesting that authority through the city manager's office. We have to stand on our own, and we have to pay for the service that we render. So this is something that we've got to look at when we have increases in our cost that are beyond our control, power, fuel, treatment plant costs from the PSA. Unfortunately, I would probably have to come back to council and ask for those increases. What we're asking for with the 8% is not going to put us money ahead. That is going to get us crews to be able to work and start replacing lines, repairing leaks sooner rather than later. We have over 10,000 services that we're going to have to replace, we feel. We cannot replace 10,000 services even with new crews in 1 year. We're talking probably a 3 to 4 year project to get all of that done. So we will see a steady decrease in leaks. We'll see a steady increase in our water sales, because anytime we have a leak, that's water we're not selling. So this is what we're shooting for.
But do you see the six-member crews, Larry, as getting us addressing the water leak problem and then installing the new services that need to be installed without a further increase for crews?
That is what we're anticipating, Mr. Pierce. These crews, obviously, we're playing catch-up right now, trying to catch up on our leak situation. These crews will be assigned. First priority is leaks. But again, rather than going out and repairing a leak, we want them to go out and actually run a new service. That way we know we will not have to have a callback to that area.
How much do we lose per annum on leaks?
It goes up and down, Mr. Homoki, and a lot of it depends on just what the usage of the water is. But we see anywhere from 18 to 25% of our water is unaccounted for each year. And if you look at that way, that's 18 to 25% of our revenue is not being collected.
And if everything goes well, we're going to reduce that percentage drastically?
We feel we can get that percentage down around 10%. There's always going to be a percentage of water that is lost that we can't sell. A good example is the Shaw Creek Water Treatment Plant is a surface water plant that has anthracite coal filters. Those filters have to be backwashed on a regular basis because of the material they're taking out of the Shaw's Creek water. Well, that backwash water is water I can't sell, so we call that lost water, and that goes in that 10%. So we feel that we can achieve the 10%. It's going to take some hard work on our part, but we feel that we can reach that number.
Larry, would you address a little bit the water that we're getting out of the springs, which right now we can't use?
Shallow springs is another item that is not in our 017 funding, our next round of sales tax funding. The radium hit that we got about 2 years ago on Shiloh was 5.8 picocuries per liter. DHEC calculates that on the basis of four samples per year, and as they get a new sample, they'll drop the old one and recalculate. The level is 5.0 picocuries per liter. Because of the violation that we had, they are not recalculating our average at this point. We have had tests that are below 5 picocuries per liter, but it was a violation. They required us to sign a consent order. That consent order requires us to put in equipment that can remove any radium that is over 5.0 picocuries per liter. Our consultants have estimated that project to be approximately $1.5 million. And that is a part of the budget that Mr. Pierce and I have discussed, that it is an unfunded mandate. It is something we must do, or we lose 1.5 million gallons of water a day. Shiloh produces approximately 1.5 million gallons of water per day and has, even in the depths of our longest drought periods that we have had. So it has been a very, very stable water source for us. Mm-hmm. Losing that 1.5 million gallons a day would hurt us pretty bad, especially during our summer months, which is our high draw months.
Mm-hmm. And radon is coming from the earth.
Radon is a naturally occurring metal that's coming from the kaolin, which underlies much of Aiken County in that area. Kentucky Tennessee Clay has a major mine just a few miles from Shiloh. The Shiloh spring bed itself is what we call a perched spring. It's on top of a kaolin layer, so it's just a naturally occurring substance that is, as the radioactive elements decay, that we see radium picked up by the water. Mm-hmm. And again, 5.8 is an extremely low number, but it is over the 5.0 that we're allowed.
Right, and that was one of our first water sources.
That water source started in 1909 and has been pumping ever since.
Thank you, Larry.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions, comments? Okay. Thanks, Larry. Maybe there'll be some other things you can answer shortly. Okay. Who would like to speak on this issue, if anyone?
There we are. Hi, Debbie Nix, 808 Wilbur Street. And my husband and I own Southern Plumbing and Electrical. We're very, very familiar with what's going on with our infrastructure. We work with it on a daily basis. A couple of things. I did a look back in a span of 10 hours from 2002 until present. I read every article written by Aiken Standard on water increases, every agenda, and every minute that was written for every water increase. And it's interesting to me that out of the six that you have passed, you didn't deny one of them. Never have for that span of time. I am not arguing that there's not a need. But I've sat here for 2 years and I've videoed, and I've watched a lot of money spent from this room, millions of dollars. The one thing that I cannot seem to come to grips with is this. Golly, I'm so sorry. This was a quote by Don Sprawls. I do not feel good about saying we do not increase taxes and then instead we increase utility rates. This is why we do not have to increase taxes. We sneak it in this way. Don Sprawls was a councilman, a city councilman. When I found that, I couldn't believe it was printed in the newspaper, actually. That was in the Aiken Standard, May 14, 2002. He struggled with what went on with the water rate increase here. We were being told it rained too much. Water rates had to go up because we didn't use enough. We weren't using our sprinklers. That was the 11.3. We were told there was a drought. And even though there was more water usage, we still needed more money. I'm sorry, but when I look through this and I look back to 2003, in 2003, this is what Roger LaDuke said. Now, this is 9 years ago. With this budget, we are also proposing to upgrade our water meter system. I think that's what we're doing now. Mr. LaDuke stated, based on a report from the consultants, the city will need $5 million over the next 5 years for capital improvements. Also, the city needs to work hard on the rehabilitation of the sewer lines. He said the lines are old and need replacement. He said the staff is asking for 7% increase because it is felt that is the number needed to carry on for the future. That was July the 9th, 2003, in the city council minutes. I have copies of this if anybody would like one. I was just amazed when I went through and started seeing the different reasons that we were increasing our water. And I'll tell you, number one, this was a really bad time to do this. This was the busiest season other than Christmas in our community. A lot of people didn't even know about it. And I had someone refute that, and what I told them was, you know what, when we went out and went door to door with the $236 million tax bond referendum, that people were being sent 8x11 postcards, they didn't know about it. So I think maybe the timing of it's really not good, but I just am really, really concerned. How many of you sitting here worried about paying your electric bill this month? Anybody? How about going to the grocery store and having to put back stuff? Buying baby formula. Everything is increasing. Not only is it increasing, guys, have a heart. At some point, have a heart. When you're spending millions of dollars on train depots, when you're spending millions of dollars on $1.7 million that's owed to you right now, when government is growing and growing and growing, and you're coming to the citizens and saying, oops, we don't have the money. And by the way, I know for a fact, according to Mr. LaDuke, who's a very good city manager, he states that one of the reasons the city water sewer rates are so low is the city has been supplementing the water and sewer fund with the local option sales tax funds. That was in minutes. I'm not sure which one because I don't have the page above it. But so obviously you can use them because you have been. So my question to you is, you've known this since 2003. We were told in 2003 and many other times we're going to fix it. I don't know that I believe it. It's 2012. I don't know why the people should believe it. If they go back and actually read the history of the water increases, have any of you guys done that? Have you gone back and researched it and just really looked at what happened?
You know the history.
It's very fascinating. It's very, very fascinating. You got a $6 million windfall. I remember that when I sat here when that happened. I watched Roger LaDuke. I have him on video with his facial expressions because he could hardly contain himself. $3.5 million was what he said you needed to put towards the infrastructure for water and sewer specifically. $1 million is what you put, and you put $3.5 million for a senior citizens building that hasn't even been built yet at Eustis Park. You are the gatekeepers. You are responsible to the citizens of the city of Aiken. You are supposed to be stewards of our tax money. And this shouldn't be something that we have to dig up to look at, nor should it be so complex that, well, we can't use funds because of this and we can't use funds for that. Well, obviously you have. So what I'm asking is this. AT&T does not put their phone line down, or they didn't. Atlantic Broadband, they don't put their lines down either. They hire subcontractors. It's cheaper. Why aren't we looking at doing that? Why? Because when we hire these six, they'll be here forever. We know that. So why haven't we just at least opened the door to looking at a subcontractor? You know, our business could never handle that. We're too small. But there are large businesses out there that do. Municipalities, you know, they do work. So I think some of you have been on this council for many, many years. And most of what's written in here came from the minutes and from the Aiken Standard. I added a few things in. And there is a mistake in here. I will admit to that because I just thought, and I want to publicly state that, that we have not paid 42.80% increase since 2002. That is an error. It will be 42.8% if this is passed. But we haven't enjoyed that one since 2002. So, you know what? I say either put this on hold and go back to the drawing table, because the people are going to know. When we find the facts, we're going to let them know. They need to know. They don't know. They're busy living their lives. They're trying to make a living. And I'm going to tell you what. I know some of them that can't pay their electric bills. Mm-hmm. And, I just think with the millions and millions and millions of dollars that come through here, there is a better way than what you're doing right now. And I ask you to vote no for it.
Thank you, Debbie. I don't agree with all of your facts, so-called facts there, but it's too take too long to get involved with each and every one of them. The question, we know what the situation is now. Some of the remarks that were made by various people, don't understand those. We'd have to research those. But we do have certain categories that even by law you can't take from one to the other. And you mentioned the depot. Everybody mentions the depot. Most of that money on the depot was raised by volunteers. It came from the accommodation tax, which are people staying in motels, paying 3 cents on a dollar. I have visitors that come in. And the 1 cent sales tax that the citizens voted on putting money in for the depot. So it's so easy to say and to relate to that. Gee, y'all spend millions of dollars on the depot and this and that. You need to look at each of these items. I'm asking everybody that wants to really get involved, look at each of the items and see where the money comes from and really how much money is being spent where it's being spent. And this is a truism here. We've got problems. In my view, what we've done over the years, we've delayed raising the taxes as much as we should have raised them, probably, when you look at that chart. And that's why we're still second lowest, even with this increase. Now, if we'd have been way up there in the middle somewhere, we wouldn't be here talking about it tonight, I suppose. But we did not want to. We've been in a downturn for a number of years now. And we did not want to raise the taxes as much as it should have been. We skipped a couple of years as well, hoping that things were going to turn around a little bit. And this is my view. And they might be turning around a little bit now, but they haven't turned out around drastically like everyone had hoped they would do. So the time is here now. We've got to make a move. And whether it's 8%, 6%, 4%, that's to be considered, perhaps. But we've got to make a move in the right direction. And we've got this new piping that Larry Morris went into details with. And so we've got to fix these leaks. And we could do nothing, and then we'd have a number of more leaks every day occurring. And I don't think anybody wants that. I've got about 10 emails today from people that didn't want us to pass this tax, of course. I don't want to pass tax either. I don't think anybody wants to pass this. But I'll read it. I'm not going to say who it came from. Many times the pipe is broken. Well, first of all, let me say this. We have enough burden with property tax increases. Now, to set the record straight on property tax increases, we haven't had a city millage tax increase on property taxes in 22 years. So don't tell me that we're burdened with property taxes. You talk to anybody moving into this city will tell you that, man, I can't believe the taxes are so low. That's probably something we ought to be raising also. But I don't want to raise it again. I want to see 23 years if we can.
We're getting ready to go into our budget now. And I don't know what we'll be able to do yet. City manager is working diligently on that right now with the staff. We thank him so much. Let me get back to this. We've been burdened enough with property tax increases. Many times a pipe is broken on the street and run water for days before repair. Not only our streets, but other streets and roads in the Aiken City area. Many times people have said, I guess the city does not pay the same water rate as we do. In a way, he's making the case for what we're trying to do here is to repair these things so that there won't be more and more leaks and water running all over the city. So, I just wanted to get my view out. I'm sure every one of us has a view, and maybe they're all different. I don't know. But we've got to do something here. We've got to do something tonight, I think. Okay. Said enough right now.
Mr. Mayor, while Mr. Guerin's coming up, I would point out there's a difference between millage rate increases and property rate increases, so I think you're correct. We have not had a millage rate increase in a long time, but property taxes have.
Now, all of us, property taxes have gone up, but there are other ways. It's a county. It's, okay, what are the others? The county, the school, you know? But I'm talking about the city, and I was very clear when I said that. It's a city millage where we actually raise the millage, which increases the city property taxes from the city. We can't do anything with the county and the school system.
But we've actually lowered the bill.
And we've actually lowered it four times, by the way. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Guerin, I have a small business on Highland Avenue. I don't disagree or argue with the point that the infrastructure with the sewer and water system is in need of repair or replacement. I just cannot understand over a period of 10 years, looking back through the records by the previous city manager, where this not has, all we seem to do is repair, not replace. And that's not going to resolve the issue. And why, back in 2010, when there was a major increase, an assessment wasn't done as what it's going to cost to replace the system, or this constant reacting to breaks and losing water. There's no accountability probably for what water is lost before the meters with breakage, from the delivery point to where you get no refund or no, you do not get paid for lost water, and why that is not addressed. But why a study hasn't been done in the last 10 years of what it's going to cost in the city of Aiken to replace the system, upgrade it to the point where we don't have this constant breakage and problems like we do where I live in Cedar Creek because of fraudulent contractors and fraudulent people in council walked away with the money that should have been put into the structure. And there need to be more transparency as what it's going to cost to replace this system and bring it to a grade where we don't have constantly breaks and so forth. Somebody's got in the engineering department, we've got to be able to do that. If you look at between 2010 and what you're asking now, you're looking at a 29.3% increase between 2010 and the present 8%, which is hefty. And I don't know if we're in competition. None of us, we'd hope the taxes are lower in Aiken rather than competing with all the other cities in the state. That's why people don't live there. That's why they live in Aiken. So I don't think that's any consequence of whether the tax should go up or down. But we understand the issues. I just think there's not enough accountability of what money is spent on, and I think we should concentrate on the infrastructure, not buying land and developing parks and this type of thing. The primary job should be to take care of the infrastructure within the city, and if there's money left over after that point, we can look at the niceties, such as train stations, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. You know, hindsight's 2020, and I agree with it. And looking back, perhaps we should have done
some other things, some more than we have. But let me say one other thing, Jerry. This is not, we don't raise taxes just based on the fact that we're low like that. I hope you don't think we do. We're paying the taxes as well. We're citizens as well. So there's no reason why we would want to do that just for the sake of doing it. Anyone else?
My name is Jerry Tumble. We own the Victorian Wedding Chapel on the other end of Lawrence Street from here. My only concern, I realize that we have cost of living increases as well as material, and you know, if you've been in business for a year, you know you just have overhead costs that have to be factored in. My only concern is we moved our business into the city in March of 1998. We have not increased 42.8% of our cost of operations since 1998, as the city is asking to do for the infrastructure of the city water and sewer department. My only concern is the cost justification. Anytime that we have a business expense and something comes up, whether it's planned or unplanned, we still look at it as to why and what can we do, what is the best avenue to attack this situation. Obviously, the best plan of attack is to throw money at it and make the problem go away. And that's my concern. We can patch it, or we can go ahead and repair it and replace, but I see some of the increases in 03 and 05 and 07 and in 2010 were for allotments of quite a few million dollars for replacement. My concern now is with those percentages increasing again, is that going to make this problem go away, or will it continuously say it from now on? We've been 14 years in the city with our business, and quite frankly, a 42 or 43%, and according to the paperwork, apparently it's been almost a done deal, because this decision, according to the paperwork, becomes effective May 1st, which is 21 days from now. So my concern is cost justification, as well as, are we just talking about something that's already been done? If it's not, if it's 21 days coming into law, is what I'm reading in the paperwork now.
It would not go into effect if it did not pass second reading tonight. It may be slated to go into effect on May 1st, but until the second reading is passed by council, it could not come into play.
And my next concern would be, granted, the city has not raised taxes in the 14 years we've been in the city. However, the county has, and the city matches the county, because the county is the one that mails the city the millage rate, and that's what the city charges. I've been told that quite a few times when I had questions concerning my tax rates.
No, that's not right. We've been, what are we, 66 now? We've been 66 for years, millage?
62.
62 now. We've come down from 110 mills going way back, you know, 21, 22 years, down to 62 mills, and with four decreases.
Well, I haven't seen it in the last 14 years, and I'll put it that way. All I've seen is increases. But my concern, again, is when it comes down to fixing it, are we going to really fix it, or is the money just going to kind of come into the coffers and go somewhere else? That's my concern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Jerry, are you saying that the city part of your tax, because when you get your tax, I think you see the county and the school board and the city. Are you saying that your city tax has increased?
Yes. My city tax and the county tax, in fact, it increased enough. We own 36 different houses and apartments here in the city. Mm-hmm. It went up on all of them. And the last time it went up, I challenged it, which you have a right to do. Won the challenge. This time they came up again. I challenged again, won the challenge again. They've mailed me a check. The city hasn't mailed me a check yet back for their rebate. But for all 36 units, I paid more. And it was
that means I had to go up in value.
Not a tax. It's not a tax percentage increase. It is a valuation of the property increase, and there lies the problem. When you increase the valuation of the property 38%, when the 52% valuation of real estate dropped, there goes the problem. And that's what caused the last changes and what caused the challenge the last two times.
Right. The what's driving this increase is the increase in the number of leaks that we've seen in the last year. And you may not have had an opportunity to review Mr. Morris's presentation at the council retreat, which was the end of January. And again, we have done the research on this new pipe that we're using and tried on Sand Shifter Court, and we're not seeing any recurrence of leaks. Unfortunately, the national standard for piping included recycled material, and we're finding now with the age of that pipe that we're beginning to have leaks and leaks on the same service line. So the 1 cent sales tax money is being used for infrastructure, and it's true that's money that the enterprise fund does not have to spend because these capital improvements are funded by the voter-approved 1 cent sales tax infrastructure installation. The shortfall is in operations and maintenance. The 1 cent sales tax money by state statute can only be used for capital improvements, not for operations and maintenance. So if we're to have a crew of six, that's three crews of two members on staff and ready to go repair leaks, and then when we're not having the incidents, high incidence of leaks, replace the water services that we need to do. In 2003, that increase was for new sender units on our wireless system. Those systems have a 10-year battery. So in 2013, we're going to start to see the need to replace those batteries in the sender unit so when our truck rides by to read the meter, that the meter sends the signal of what's being used. What we're experiencing is a need. We certainly had the customer complaints. We had the calls to City Hall, to our council members last summer, and we experienced a backlog of water leak repairs. The whole reason for this increase is to have a staff to install this new piping so that we do fix the problem and go on to upgrading the services, the water services, which is an ongoing operations and maintenance expense. That's what's driving this. And we've been very clear in the materials that council has reviewed in the presentation at Horizons in January that that is what this money will be used for. And that's an operations maintenance need that we knew when we put the system in 2003 we'd have to replace it at some time. So we're just not paying the same price as we were in 2003. And in fact, since 2003 to today, we've added almost 3,000 water services to our system. So with an expanding system and only adding two people in the entire engineering and utilities division, we just have not kept up with staffing needs. This increase allows us to fund those new staff members to perform this much-needed maintenance to our system.
So the balance of the percentages of the increases since 2002 have went to 3,000 water services?
No, that would not be correct. We have just had an increase in the number of meters out in the city. So the system has gotten larger, and staff has not, frankly, in many, many, many years. And we have a problem that we need to address, and that's why we're asking for this.
So my question is, where did all the rest of the money go, though, with the other percentages since 02? That's
And that's,
40.
Of course, all in those budgets that are available online, and you can see the revenue figures and the expenditures.
If this passes, you'll end up with a 42.8% increase since 2002.
We're going to have an 8% increase to fund staff to fix water leaks. That's what I'm going to wind up with.
The 8% now. That's what I'm saying is, as far as since 2002, you've had a 42.8% increase. I mean, that's a pretty high increase, no matter what kind of business you're in.
4% a year. We've just expanded the system. We've expanded our responsibilities. We know we have this need. The 8% increase is to fund the staff that we need to go and repair and perform maintenance on a system where some segments of it, the piping is over 100 years old, and we are going to have to replace that infrastructure. And when we do replace infrastructure, we do go to bid, and we bid that out and have outside companies replace water lines. What we need to do is perform our maintenance on the system, which we've typically done in-house. When we were having all the water leaks, as a matter of fact, we tried contacting several private firms, and they just expressed no interest in it or quoted prices that we just could not afford to pay. It's just far more efficient for us to have staff than to hire outside companies to fix water leaks.
So in a perfect world, you're saying that the 8% increase will make the problems go away?
What I'm saying is, and please don't twist my words, what I'm saying is in order for us to have two-member crews to repair water leaks and swap out the services we know are aging out, we need this 8% increase. And to have the equipment and to pay the benefits, that's what this is for.
And that all won't be done in 1 year.
No. To replace the water meters, it will take us at least 3 years.
But I think we need to recognize that part of this is malfeasance in the past, my sense anyway. I'm not sure that staff would agree. We have not spent enough money on the infrastructure over the years. It's caught up with us, quite frankly. It caught up with us for the last couple of years. We get a report in our packet on the number of water leaks that we have. This summer, it was horrendous. I got a lot of calls. People just didn't understand why in the city of Aiken somebody couldn't come out within 2 or 3 days to fix a water leak when they see the water running down the street. And that's costing you, and that's costing me. So there is a sense that maybe we didn't do enough on infrastructure in the last year. We tried to focus on that. There are a couple of us on the council worked hard to get extra money in sales tax 3 for infrastructure, and we were successful. We have $4 million for water in sales tax 3 and $4 million for sewer. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's enough, quite honestly. We've got a structure that has been in existence for 50, 60 years. We found out that some of the pipes weren't put in properly. We found out some of the pipes didn't last as long as we thought they were going to last. I mean, we're using this new pipe. Now, I don't want to spend 30 days in use with a new pipe and say, that's wonderful and that's going to fix everything, because pipes don't wear out that quickly. So a year from now or 2 years from now, maybe this new pipe that we just decided that we're going to use will prove to be not as good as people thought it was going to be. But what we're faced with now, practically, is we got a lot of water leaks, and we got to have the capability to fix them. And if we don't fix them, it's going to cost us money. I think we estimate the water that goes down the drain because of our inability to fix water leaks is somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million, and that's a figure that staff hasn't disputed. So we've got to move, and we've got to move rather quickly. I don't like tax increases more than anybody else, but this one is almost a no-brainer. We've got to get the capability to repair these water leaks, and as the city manager says, we've got the meter issue to deal with. We do have planned infrastructure improvements. When that sales tax 3 money starts coming in, it's well off at this point, probably a couple of years off. We spent a lot of money in sales tax 2 for infrastructure. Obviously, not enough. But it's a case, percentage-wise, it looks terrible. I mean, when you say 40%. But on the other hand, when you turn around and say it's $3 to $5 to $6 a month, it's still bad, but not quite as bad. But we really need to do this.
Well, again, that was just my only concern.
Yeah.
And
I agree with you on the property tax, because what the county did, in my mind, is reprehensible. I mean, I think, personally, I think they just increased everything up 15% without regard to the market and so forth, and I'm glad you appealed and won. I appealed and won, but we shouldn't have had to go through that process. I mean, you're not going to convince me that government works when they give a 15% increase in value at a time when the economy is on its backside with 8-9% unemployment. So.
I'm just curious, given what you've heard described with the intensity of the problem with the infrastructure, what ideas do you have in terms of proposing solutions to this? Will you?
Unfortunately, I think it's a little bit, it's too little too late. In 02 is whenever infrastructure should have started replacing.
Right.
When that increase started, and that was the time to get the shovels out and dig a ditch.
And started doing it gradually.
But, you know, 10 years later, we're still looking at the same infrastructure problem. It still hasn't gone away.
Right.
So I agree. You know, something needs to be done, but when and where and by whom? That's the question. That's the concern I have. It's just, you know, it's business. You just have to cost justify something. Well, that's the way I think of it anyway. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Larry, would you talk a minute about this pipe again and just its capability and who certified it and all the, that kind of thing? How does it compare with the best that we could get?
The American Water Works Association is the certifying body for the United States. The best pipe that they have certified that we were using was a polyethylene cell class 3408. That material did have a percentage of recycled plastics in it that was allowed by the AWWA, the American Water Works Association. The research that we did, looking online, looking through a lot of papers that a lot of universities had done, show that the 3408 material over a time period would do what's called slow growth cracking. And basically what that means is that as the pressure changes in the material, as chlorine is in it over the years, that it gets brittle and it starts to crack. And that's the slow growth cracking that they're talking about.
How about the sand shifter cord pipe?
Sand shifter cord pipe was PE3406 that we replaced. It was actually a predecessor to the better material that we were using. We even tried going to thicker material in the 3408. That did not work either. The material that we found, that we were able to find through the AWWA, is a material that is made to flex. It is made to have a wide pressure variation and temperature variation. It is still a polyethylene, but it's called cross-linked polyethylene. The PE3408 is a linear polyethylene so that the molecules in it are basically in straight patterns. The cross-linked polyethylene is made at a different temperature so that the molecules in it actually form X's. And it does not get brittle with the variations in our pressure that we have in our system. It also does not suffer chlorine attack as readily because it does not have a majority of recycled material in it. The 3408 material is a black pipe, which means it had carbon in it. That carbon was put in there to counteract the effects of the sun. Well, that also makes it brittle over the years. The PEX, PEX A, as it's called, does not have carbon. You cannot store it in the sun. The material that we installed comes in boxes, and we left it in the box until we actually put it in the ground. So that is one thing that we have to make sure of, is that the material does come to us in unopened boxes. So the material that we had went in very well. It has performed well for us over the past few months. To say that it is a cure-all, right now it will solve our problem with the material that we have currently in the ground. The best material would be copper, but unfortunately our water is so aggressive in the city that we can't use copper. The Environmental Protection Agency will only allow 1 milligram per liter of copper in our water. Basically, 1 pound of copper in 1 million pounds of water is the way to think about that. Our water is so aggressive. If we used copper services, as many of our sister cities do, first of all, the copper goes from about, we're paying around 50 cents a foot right now, I mean 35 cents a foot right now for the polyethylene. We're going to be paying about a dollar for the PEX. Copper is around $6 a foot. And if you've ever seen an older house that has a drippy faucet in a lavatory or something with white in it, and you see that blue color that's on it, that's the copper being eaten from those lines. So that's why we can't use that. I talked to other cities in the region. Greenwood, Commission of Public Works, the gentleman there that runs that used to be a DHEC staffer that I've known for many years. About 15 years ago, they were experiencing the same problem that we are. Their water is not aggressive. It is a surface water, comes out of Lake Greenwood for the most part, and they were able to go to copper. So over the past 10 years, they have been replacing all of their services with copper and requiring new developers to do that. So we're not suggesting that. Our water is just too aggressive. So we're really left with not a whole lot of options, Mayor, to actually replace these lines. We looked at using PVC, which is in many, many homes. We use PVC for our larger lines. It does not have the problems that polyethylene does. However, it is a much stiffer material and breaks much easier, so that anytime it's hit, you end up with breaks on it, and it has to be glued together. So there's a problem if you've got, especially if it's a cold day and we're out there in the middle of a snow or sleet or rain or what have you, or down in the hole with mud, that PVC doesn't glue too well. So it just hasn't been an option for us. That's the research we've done, Mayor. I apologize for being lengthy, but that's what we've done and looked at.
That's fine. Very Larry. Good. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Larry, one of the things that we should emphasize is we need a stronger inspection system when new developments go in to make sure that, you know, we don't run into the problems like they do at Ascot Drive, you know, where the foundation, where the pipes are laying or the sewers are laying, are sinking. So, you know, the whole infrastructure is dropping. Regardless of what you put in there, you're going to have to make sure that the inspection, while it's being constructed, is going to be, you know, comprehensive.
And, Mr. Mahokey, you are certainly correct about that. And in January of 2008, we presented to council a rewritten ordinance concerning development. And in that development ordinance, each developer must have an engineer of record who performs all of the tests, the compaction test on the roads, in the ditches, also certifies that the pipe that's going in the ground is the correct pipe, and that has been in place since 2008. Any subdivision that was approved prior to that does not have to have an engineer of record, but everything that has come in since then does have to have that, and we do get that information in. And we are also following that requirement ourselves. A good example is the recent project that we did to extend Eastgate Drive down near the new Cracker Barrel. The engineer that did the design work, we went ahead and wrote a contract for them to actually come in, do the compaction testing. We had an independent laboratory, not their own people, but an independent laboratory do that testing. And then that engineer has to certify that the project is complete and has been done according to city specifications. So, yes, we're requiring it of developers, and we're requiring it of ourselves.
Okay. Good. Larry, you made a statement that I'm a little confused. You said a development approved before the 2008 ordinance went into effect. Could you clarify that? If somebody is building, let's pick on Woodside, everybody does. If they're building a new street out there and they're going to put new pipes down right now, do they have to comply with the 2008 ordinance?
That is correct, sir.
It is. Okay, thank you. I didn't understand that way. Thank you.
The illustration Mr. Mahokey gave was Ascot Drive, and that was done prior to 2008.
Okay.
And, of course, we are all aware of the problems out there and the fact that it was an orphan subdivision, and when I came to council with having to take that, you know, we knew that we were going to have problems because it was an orphan and the problems were surfacing already.
Now, Chucker Creek development, just outside of Woodside there, that is under the new guidelines, right?
That is correct, and we have worked with that developer. We've also worked with DHEC, making sure that the stormwater system out there meets DHEC standards. So, and we do have those reports that come to us from that. So, that is
you're creating a perfect world, right?
No, sir. I wish I could say that, but I don't think any world is going to be perfect for us.
Thank you, Larry.
Yes, sir.
Anyone else like to speak on this issue? If not, then it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay. We have motion and a second. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I was sitting in that Horizons meeting back the first part of this year and realized that this is a problem that the city of Aiken is faced with the water leaks and piping that's not as good as it should have been. I realized that, you know, it would save the city a tremendous amount of money to have these replaced and to be able to repair these leaks in a much more quick fashion. But I personally have a difficult time, in light of this economy, passing along an 8% increase in water rates to our citizens. I have heard from a tremendous number of citizens in our community, some on fixed incomes, others who own small businesses that use a great deal of water, laundry, self-service laundry business, washeterias, that this is going to affect. And I think we all know that on a daily basis we go pull up to the gas pumps and it's increased. We go to the grocery stores and there's increases there. And the majority of our senior citizens today conserve water. They don't water lawns. They use as less water as they possibly can. And I would just like to make sure that we have looked every possible where there could be funding to accomplish this without passing this on to our citizens at this time. If there is a fund somewhere that can be used for this, I'd like to see that used. And let's delay doing this until perhaps better economic times.
Mr. Mayor, I agree with Mr. Wells as far as, you know, the state of the economy and the burden it's putting on our citizens and on a lot of us. I personally don't want to see the rates increase, but after hearing all of the presentations from Mr. Morris and reading all the materials, I don't see how we can get around it.
We really were careful. We did look at all possible sources. We did not want to have to do this.
It's the very last thing I wanted to do. It's going to hurt a lot of people.
Well, I've got a question, Mr. Mayor. Larry, your examples always show 800 cubic feet of water for those bills examples that you give. What is a household that uses 800 cubic feet?
Mr. Mulkey, that depends really a little bit on the type of house that it is. Let me give you, for instance, if it's a home with a garbage disposal, we see a larger water usage there than we do with other homes. if it's a home that, as in Woodside, requires yard sprinklers, certainly the 800 cubic feet is too low for those homes. What we try to do is figure that that is a household that does not have a heavy yard sprinkler, does not use garbage disposals, and has 3 to 4 people in it, is what that 800 cubic feet will do.
It's about 600 gallons a month. 20 gallons a day, 600 gallons a month.
800 cubic feet would be about...
2,400, isn't it?
About, it's a little over 6,000 gallons a month. It's 7.5 gallons per cubic foot.
Yeah.
Is what the calculation is on it. I've checked my own usage at my house, and of course, I have had a big family at home until just this past year. We become empty nesters. But when I had my my girls there and my one son, we actually ran about 70 gallons per person per day. That is a tremendous amount of water. But, you know, our bills were very, very much higher than 800 cubic feet. I was paying around 4,000 cubic feet a month. That's with a big family.
Got my decimal point in the wrong place.
Yes, sir.
It happens sometimes.
Well, Mr. Mayor, may I make a few comments? And several of the gentlemen have mentioned about, and the lady, about past maintenance not being kept up to snuff. And I've been working with this for 7 years now, because the street I moved in on has had water leaks since it was new. But to put it in perspective, there's about 18 or 19,000 meters in the city that we're talking about. And at $3 a piece, $54,000 a month, roughly $650,000 a year. One line leaking for 3 weeks at 1 gallon a minute all year long will leak almost that much water and money, because of the amount of cubic feet that'll go out of a leak for that long. And Larry's verified my numbers there. So the sooner we fix the lines, you can save over $1 million a year just in fixing them sooner. And of course, we'll be replacing them. So for what it's worth, I've gone through a lot of these numbers and working in the past with Mr. Ledoux and Mr. Morris and now Mr. Pierce in that. So I've been one of them that's pushing this. Hey, we're leaking a lot of water, and we need to stop it. Mr. Morris said we're leaking 8.5% of our water, and we pump a little over 4 billion gallons a year, Larry. It's 8% of 4 billion gallons is what we got to stop leaking. That's a lot of water. So it is not a good time to increase it. And from talking with Mr. Pierce, it should get us for a couple of years, because we put in enough inflation to take care of electric increase, which is probably in 2013, maybe 2014. They've already, SCNG has already applied for a rate increase. So it's not a good timing, but it still has to be done. And there's some of us like me watches the number of leaks and number of repairs every month that come out in Mr. Morris's report, and I plot it out for myself just to keep up with it. So for what it's worth, those are my comments.
Thank you, sir. Anything else? Any other comments?
I do. I talk with a lot of people who are on fixed income, and I can say that they don't want to see the increase, but given the discussion regarding what we're faced with and cost, some of the things that I'm concerned about with the replacement of the infrastructure, whether we have the right infrastructure to replace, and whether the taxpayers will see more cost incurred if we don't have the right infrastructure. I think the gentleman mentioned here in terms of a plan, what kind of plan do we have that's mapping out that we know clearly that the money is going for one, for this replacement. We can clearly see this replacement rather than doing it in a spotty type way, much like the housing. And that is one thing I'd like to see in terms of more of a strategy for infrastructure replacement. And as we talked, I thought about an infrastructure committee that dealt with roads and bridges and water and sewer lines. All these things are going through my head. But Secondly, as Don mentioned, the other thing I thought of is, what else do we have? What are the other options besides going to the taxpayers who are already seeing increases in the pumps? It's interesting that water and sewer we see every month. When the gas goes up at the pump, and we don't know what it's going to be tomorrow, that it could be a dollar more. We pay that and we don't say anything because we don't know who to voice our concerns to, but we're closer to the citizens and they can come here and tell us what they're concerned with. But my question is, Richard, what else are there other options that you see, mayors, you see that we have besides going to the taxpayer and say, let's bear this cost with this increase?
Well, you know, there are other sources of funds. We have the 1 cent sales tax money for the voter-approved infrastructure updates.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at Horizons, we did present a timeline to council to show the different projects we're going to work on, when we're going to work on them. So we've got that all mapped out. We do have other sources of the depreciation that we take every year. We've had some reserve funds. We've used those. So it is a last resort. I mean, we don't just freely come up and say,
right,
let's come to the taxpayers and make them pay the way. This is for a specific use, a specific purpose, and something we've talked about so many times, and this is a tangible way for us to address it.
And the big question is, do we do it now or later? And later, it's going to be more costly. I think that's what Richard and Dick has said. So
it will be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else? If not, we've got a motion and a second for approval of the 8%. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Opposed? Okay. Pass the 6-1. Okay. Item 2 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to approve a cell tower lease and a water tank at York Street, South Boundary, and Whiskey Road. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you so much. After our first reading at our last meeting in March, I've had some follow-up conversations with the folks who represent the T-Mobile folks, Black Dot. Black Dot Wireless has reviewed materials that I've provided them, and I think in my cover memo they were talking about renewing at $12,800. That was a mistake in their calculation. The renewal would actually be at $13,500 for the year, and then there would the 2.5% increase would commence on July 15, 2013. That would be at $13,837.50 and 2.5% a year for the balance of the term. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance approving a lease of space on the Whiskey Road, South Boundary Avenue, and York Street water tower to Black Dot Wireless. And again, they are the agents representing T-Mobile Wireless that has an existing antenna on the water tower at South Boundary, York Street, and Chesterfield. So for approval tonight is the renewal of this lease, and that will be at the annual rent of $13,500 from July 15, 2012 to July 15, 2013, when the automatic increases would then take effect.
Okay, thank you, sir. Is anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue? You may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for discussion, consideration. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I'd move that we approve the second reading public hearing of this ordinance to approve the cell tower lease.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to establish a part-time position of Deputy City Solicitor. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you so much. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the fiscal year 2011-2012 budget to create the position of Deputy City Solicitor. This is anticipated to be a regular part-time employee, Mayor, as we set forth in the ordinance and in my memo. You approved this unanimously at first reading at the March 26th meeting. This will give our city solicitor some flexibility in hiring a deputy solicitor, whether that would be on a contract basis or as a regular part-time employee. So for consideration tonight is the second reading and public hearing of that ordinance.
Okay, thank you, sir. Anyone in the audience like to speak on this issue? If not, it's back to city council.
Am I to understand that this person will not have benefits, city benefits?
A regular part-time employee probably would not work enough hours.
But it would be a part-time employee, not a contract.
Correct. Well, there actually will be a choice. The way we've got the ordinance drafted, the city solicitor could hire somebody as a regular part-time employee or on a contract basis, whatever would, you know, best work for the city solicitor. But it does give that option for a regular part-time employee.
So when
all
we,
of your budgets have a line item for other professional services.
We do not have
a regular part-time employee position for deputy city solicitor, so we'd be creating that.
So when we go out to hire this person, are we going to advertise it as a part-time employee?
That's my understanding, that it would be advertised that way.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Well, my question is ordinance actually does not say anything about a contract employee.
It does not fall under the other legal services? It's other professional services. This does give the city solicitor the opportunity to advertise for a regular part-time deputy city solicitor,
okay,
which we did not have before.
Well, if it says a regular part-time, she has to advertise, right?
Yes, that is required by state law.
Is it to her discretion not to advertise and just get somebody on a contract type basis?
Yes. Under the city procurement code, professional services are not required to be advertised.
The last question I have is, if it's a line item for a part-time employee, there's a different line item for the professional services. Are those interchangeable?
My understanding is we're creating an actual regular part-time position for the deputy city solicitor. So
okay,
it does give the solicitor a choice. I would encourage the solicitor to go ahead and just advertise for a regular part-time deputy since we've created that position.
Why don't we just say that?
It is a creative position that will be in the budget. Otherwise, it would be shown as vacant. So it does say
so
that in the
budget.
Ordinance.
That's what
if this is helpful, I don't know whether this will be or not. The purpose of this ordinance is simply to create the opportunity to allow a part-time employee to be hired to fill the role of deputy city solicitor. Presently, with the way the books are written now, you would have to hire a contract employee or a contract person, lawyer, to fill this role because your 2011-2012 budget did not have any funds set aside for this position. And this would be fixed in your next budget. The next budget likely would go ahead and have that position if the deputy city solicitor, if the city solicitor believes that she's going to need that assistance for the upcoming fiscal year.
The position will be created and it will be in the budget this year and next year.
Okay.
The way it's drafted.
Now, is the position actually going to have a line item cost against it?
Yes. Yes, it will.
Okay. Will it cover all the necessary immunities that a solicitor enjoys?
Yes, sir. It would be a city employee, just not a full-time. It's a regular part-time.
Okay.
And my understanding is with that classification. Now, there is a pending Supreme Court case. And we expect a ruling to come out before the summer recess, so we'll have a final answer to it. But this definitely makes them an employee of the city, so there's no question what role they're in when they come to city.
Okay, why does this contract employee keep coming back and forth? It seems like the discussion.
In the creation of the position, who knows what the professional services may be. It might be a handwriting expert. You may have conflicts with your city solicitor and the deputy solicitor, but you have to bring in a third party to try the case. That would be other professional services. The way the ordinance is drafted, though, this creates a regular part-time position for the city solicitor to then fill.
Okay, one last question.
Okay.
If, in fact, the solicitor hires somebody on a contract basis, they do not enjoy any of the immunities that the part-time employee would.
That's what the Supreme Court's going to answer for us before the summer recess, we hope.
Why don't you tell them what to do?
That would be great. I could call up one. Wow. Thank you for that vote of confidence, Mr. Hamoki. You're awesome.
Okay, do we have a motion in the second for approval of this?
I so move.
Yes, I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, show of hands, please. On the passes unanimously.
And I'll let the city solicitor know she was here earlier. Oh, she's still
she's
here.
There.
Thank you. She's doing a very good job for us. Council, I want you to know that. She's here. I just couldn't see because Reverend Slaughter was blocking my line of sight.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Can I interject? I, as I mentioned to you before, and I was been led to believe that there were some folks from my district that were willing to come concerned about White Marsh. I see the White Marsh folks here, but I don't see anybody from the villas or the patio homes. Is there anybody from Hounds Lake not living on White Marsh here? There doesn't appear to be. Flo, I'm sorry. What, is there someone back there? Okay.
If I may, Mr. DeWar, can I just kind of
yes.
give some background?
Yeah.
We had put some.
My understanding is that they made the word that they were not coming tonight and they were going to schedule it for another meeting.
Oh, okay. What we're in the process of doing on White Marsh, we've got the rubber speed bumps in place. They've been in place for approximately 1 year. We sent the council into the concerned neighbors the results of speed studies we've done to show that the speed bumps have actually slowed down traffic on White Marsh, which was a concern of a petition that we had that was signed by 21 different addresses that represented 32 people on White Marsh in the attached drives that wanted to have a speed bumps that would slow the speeders and detour the through traffic. White Marsh became a cut through, much like Cardinal and Oriole. We are going to try, and I've been educated today by our city, by our engineering and utilities director. They have something that's called an asphalt speed table. And the rubber bumps, if you've been across them, tend to jar you when you go across them. Now, Larry, don't let me misspeak. My understanding with the asphalt speed table, you can actually go across those at 15 to 20 miles an hour and not have the jarring effect of these rubber bumps. What we would like to do is kind of a next step is to replace the middle rubber speed bump with this asphalt table and see if that provides the relief that so many expressed at our public hearing we did as far as a smoother transition across the traffic calming device. The reason we don't want to do all three is if we put it in and it's a disaster, it's an unholy mess to clean up. So we'd rather clean up one mess instead of three. So what we wanted to do was go forward with a test asphalt speed table, try that, see how that works, and then look for other opportunities to put a lower profile, less jarring traffic calming device in place. That's what we would propose to do.
Well, yeah.
Yes, sir. Would you like to come up and speak so we could? You certainly are.
Do you pay taxes?
Anybody's allowed to. Well, don't get the jitters now. Don't get the jitters, the nervousness. Like we do all the time.
Okay. I'm Mark Pitts, and I live at 32 Troon Way. And we've been through this hassle about speed bumps and all that. What I wanted to talk about tonight, since I'm not representing the association, I'm just representing me. Okay. After we got Richard's letter, which essentially says I'm going to leave two speed bumps and put one in the middle, I knew that didn't sound right. So I went on the internet to figure out, and I went to the International Transportation Engineering Association guidelines, and I'm going to read from the guidelines for design and application of speed humps. And it won't be long. Speed humps are sometimes referred to as sleeping policemen, because you don't have to put the police out to watch them. Most agencies implement speed humps with a height of 3 to 5 inches and 12 to 14 feet wide. And this is like you see the big ones at Hilton Head and this kind of thing, where they don't stop the traffic. Owls are 2.5 inches high to 3 inches high, and they're 3 feet wide. A speed bump. It's also a raised pavement area. Speed bumps are typically found on private roadways and parking lots. And that was the conversation about whether we were trying to make this a private road or not. Speed bumps generally have a height of 3 to 6 inches and a travel length of 1 to 3 feet. So essentially what we got is a speed bump that's made for parking lots and driveways, not for residential roads. That's a speed hump. Speed humps and bumps are critically different. With the impacts on vehicles within residential operating speed ranges, vehicles slow to about 20 miles an hour on streets with properly installed speed humps. And that's what the idea is. This is a 25 mile an hour road, so you would expect to get 20 to 25 miles an hour without wrecking your car. A speed bump, on the other hand, causes significant driver discomfort at typical residential operating speeds and generally results in vehicle damage. That's what we have. Speed bumps of varying design have been routinely installed on private driveways and parking lots. Speed humps, on the other hand, have evolved from extensive research and testing and have been designed to achieve a specific result on vehicle operations without imposing unacceptable safety risk. So I think if we go back and have your traffic engineers look at re-engineering this thing and have either one or two speed humps, and this isn't rocket science. They make specifications and standards. You can go read them. What we got out there now should have never been put out there, would not have caused all this controversy. What it's got is neighbors fighting neighbors and everything else.
Mr. Beedenbo has that asphalt table designed.
The table is another phase of this which can be used.
Right, and that,
but,
that's what
you know,
got.
Design a speed hump, not rocket science.
Right. Right. We have a design. Can we?
Have you seen the design?
Let him put the design up so you can see it, sir.
Mark, you may solve the problem without the group.
I think we can solve it without going through all this other stuff. And the other thing, I don't like stop signs, and I don't like to have the police have shit out there.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
That was the thing we looked at, was initially some stop signs and not the speed
bump. But you, in your letter, you didn't say anything about the police.
Well, we did have public safety take a look at it, and I did put it in my letter. This is the actual table. And you'll see it is 3 inches high, and it's 18 feet wide.
Yeah, that's just like the normal one. You read out the specifications.
That's right.
What we got out there now needs to be put in the parking lot somewhere or even in the garage and left there.
Yes, sir. That's why we wanted to try that and see if that didn't work a lot better.
Okay. I wasn't trying to cause controversy.
No, no.
Are we in agreement to try one of these? Is that what we're saying here?
Yes, sir. We want to try one and see how it works.
What are we talking about in terms of timing?
We're ready to go.
Okay. I think I want to just say on behalf of both constituencies here that they're both on the same page in wanting to control the speed on White Marsh.
Got it.
Unfortunately, White Marsh is a through street. It's a through street for the people that live in the villas and what have you, and they're not in favor of having to get on the bypass to go to the golf club.
Right.
So there are three speed bumps on Hounds Lake Drive as well, that if this works, I would love to see. I don't have a lot of complaints, but I'll guarantee you personally, I stop before every one of them. And when I go down to White Marsh to check it out, it's a stop sign for me.
Right.
Other people go over it. So if we could, and the other issue is, do we really need three or do we need two?
Well, now, again, we worked with public safety on that and felt that the three.
Understand. And
if you go by design standards and go to, there's one, they tell you how to put them in.
And the other issue is whether we ought to have one closer to Hounds Lake Drive where most of the children live, instead of the three at the other end. So,
right now,
you know, the good side is that people want to work together in the neighborhood to resolve this issue. That's a positive side. And I really believe we can work this out satisfactorily. I'm sorry to jump in, but I didn't see anybody from the other side, and I know the folks in White Marsh have been here since 7 o'clock. So, and they some of them have to go back to work and so forth. So, if
since we're on the subject,
okay,
would any of you like to speak? Yeah, that was a jump, and all of a sudden I wondered, what in the world? That's not our next item. But it's one we wanted to talk about anyway, so
yeah,
that's good.
Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Bob Del Castillo. I live on 11 Roundhill Court, as Dick said. I do appreciate the fact that you put the speed bumps in there because it has greatly reduced the speed in that area. My wife and I walk our dogs on that road all the time, and I have literally had to jump into the woods of the side of the road in order to get out of the way of people driving down that road. And I appreciate the fact that there are some people that hate those speed bumps. I don't like them. I drive them every day. I cross them at 20 miles an hour, and I don't have any problems at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if there's a better option that we can try, such as that, which makes everybody in the neighborhood happy, I'm glad to have it. But I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Bob. Now, one other question. Do we know where that's going to be located?
It'll be in place of the middle rubber bump, so we can try that out, make sure it's going to work better. Then we can put the other two in.
Okay. Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. But
well, it seems to be at this point, but again, the other side is not here, so to speak. I can't imagine it would be a problem, but
well,
I'll make some
last.
I do think the last bump should be closer down to where the kids live.
Yeah.
Closer to Hounds Lake Drive.
Yes.
We can certainly
because people still, I mean, there are folks right now that do 45 between the bumps.
Wow.
Yeah. Speed up.
And
you're
you are right.
Have that.
You are right because our radar has showed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We picked up that.
Yeah. And that's a good point because we've now got at least two speed surveys. I've still got the original one, Chief, if you've not seen it. But we've got enough data on that street to have a sense of where those devices should be.
You bet.
I got a quick question. Does this impact secure or safety at all? If the fire truck has to go, does that, you know, do the people fall off the back?
Well, this would be far better for the fire trucks, but they're both acceptable.
It'll actually be an improvement.
Yeah.
But they don't really have a problem with the rubber speed bumps. We went over that with them before we put it in. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Sorry for the false alarm.
Okay. Our first item under new business.
It's
a resolution to accept donation of land from Second Baptist Church and to authorize an option to purchase land. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. The resolution is a resolution authorizing acceptance of donated property from Second Baptist Church. On page 124 of your packet, you have a letter from Kenneth Baldwin, the church administrator for Second Baptist Church, who's here in the audience. Reverend Doug Slaughter is here from Second Baptist as well. I understand you had a wonderful Easter celebration. That's excellent. On page 127, you'll see there are two different parcels. The one that's outlined in the green ink is parcel A, 11.5 acres. The church is proposing to donate that parcel to us. Then there's a parcel B of about 20 acres. Thank you, Mr. Beedenbow. That's great. That's outlined in yellow. That's additional land that they would be willing to sell to the city of Aiken at fair market value. This letter was of particular interest because in the third round of the 1 cent sales tax, there is money that is set aside for the purchase of a north side park, and it's a land purchase. This is actually a donation, a proposed donation of land with an option then to purchase the remaining if council is so inclined. So for consideration tonight is a resolution to accept donation of a property that is contained in the materials that we've provided you as cited, as well as an option to purchase the other land at fair market value, which would have to be determined by an appraisal. Of course, there would be due diligence involved in an environmental survey. My understanding is this property has an environmental survey that's about 2 years old. In any event, there would be access issues, too, that we would have to be sure to make sure the public land that's owned by the city has access to the roadway, which is the drawing that's up on the projector at this time. Thanks for council consideration this evening, Mayor.
Okay. Pastor, would you like to speak or someone else to say anything about this?
Mr. Mayor, before we go any further, I don't know whether it would be a conflict of interest for me. My health center will be located or construct a facility on this property that Second Baptist will have their Family Life Center. And we have no other interest in the other land, but if it's going to be a conflict, I could recuse myself. But I don't see where it would be a conflict of interest.
It's hard for me to understand all of the details of what you're talking about by just hearing what you've just said. Uh-huh. There is no harm in recusing yourself from the discussion so that there's no question that you've avoided the impropriety. If we wanted to get a more detailed answer, usually we have to do these things before the city council meeting, and we have to get letters from the state ethics mm-hmm. commission. Okay. And if it's a concern, we could certainly hold up consideration of this for another time. But if you just recused yourself from the proceedings, I think that would probably make sure that there was absolutely no problem whatsoever. What we do is we ask that the council member leave the room while the discussions are ongoing.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
City Council, it's good to be back. I'm Doug Slaughter, pastor of Second Baptist Church, and it's kind of delightful to be coming, not asking for anything, but trying to offer something. Second Baptist Church is very community-oriented. One of our philosophies is to make the gospel so real people can go home and sleep in it at night. And to that end, we've done a lot of community development, housing. We have a school. About 7 years ago, we started purchasing property downtown. It's about 70 acres. We purchased that property in two purchases, 30 acres that runs from York Street down Columbia Avenue. You can't really, I guess I could move this. Mm-hmm. I guess I could move this up.
Absolutely.
Uh-oh.
But it'd be nice not to turn it off.
I'm sorry about that.
Listen.
It's technology.
I wish I could say you're the first person to do that, but I can't say that.
It's technology. But I can describe the 30-acre property is bordered by York Street, Columbia Avenue, and Teague Street. The 40 acres is bordered by Teague Street and DuPont Landing and the railroad track that runs from Park Avenue back somewhere. I don't even know where the property ends. In the 30-acre property purchase, there was about 11.4 acres that could only be used for parking because of elevation. And we thought about putting parking there, but just trying to think of ways that we can make the property more beneficial to the whole community, we came up with the idea, what about donating the land to the city to develop a park, whatever that park might look like. We took McDonald Law down with us, and I think Mr. Pierce has been down, and Glenn from Parks and Recreation to see the land. And as we looked at what the possibilities for the land, they said we could do a major park there. And we were willing to donate the 11.49 acres, but if you wanted additional land, it's buildable land, and we are building houses on that property and doing some other things, we would make part of that land available on the 40 acres to extend the park to the yellow area if that would be something that the city would want. Our only stipulation is that the 11.49 acres be used as a park. We don't want you to put a building there at some point. I thought it might be interesting also to share with you what some of the other land uses are going to be in that area. We will build a sanctuary. I don't know if you can see that at the corner of Columbia Avenue and York Street. There will be a sanctuary there. In the middle, there's a building that's outlined. It's kind of an L-shaped building. At some point, and Lord only knows when that's going to be, maybe with the next pastor, we're going to build a family life building there. In the upper left-hand corner, just at the corner of the yellow, we're in process of negotiating with Margaret Weston to put a major health facility there in that corner that would house doctor's offices, some dental offices, as well as some administrative space for them. We are in process of making that land available to them. We thought also, you know, not only is it important for us to have, you know, a medical facility, but to create some recreational space for exercise, which is equally important to the health of the community. And so we're here today to present that to you. To be honest, we personally never thought about going beyond the 11.49 acres, but with the help of McDonald Law and his visual imagination, we really designed a much more significant park for the north side that would include softball fields, baseball fields, tennis courts, soccer fields, basketball courts, which would be a major park that would be available. It would be city-owned, of course, and city-maintained, of course, but it would be excellent and available not only to the persons who live. It's about four or five blocks away from Crosland Park. It's two blocks away from three blocks away from Hans Village. It's really centrally located. We're right across the street from Aiken High School, so it would be a really nice public place for the citizens of Aiken. And our only stipulation is that it would be maintained as a park and for recreational use.
And Glenn Parker is here, and he could speak to how this would fit within their strategic plan for recreation in the city of Aiken.
Okay.
Glenn, yeah, I'd like to hear that.
Glenn, would you like to speak?
Reverend, while he comes up, do you own a property all the way up to DuPont Drive?
Yes, we do.
What I had jotted down, actually, as Pastor Slaughter was speaking, was this is consistent with our master plan and calls for the north side. It also goes with, and you can see a little squiggly line that follows throughout the whole development here, goes through their parking lot, actually goes up by their sanctuary. That's a walking path that we had proposed for that area and talked about a little bit, which would tie into the development that Ms. Diggs is talking about, that people on that property could hit the walking track very easily and access it, so physical fitness and wellness. I think when you look at the fields that are shown on there, that's a concept. I think that was shown more by Mr. Law as to what would fit on the property than that is what's going to be on the property. I think we were just showing, you know, if we were to acquire this amount of property, this is what could be done. Obviously, we would want to do public meetings in the area and talk to the people about what they would like to see before we built anything over there. But I think this was just sort of to give us just that idea of what the potential holds for this property. We've walked it. It's relatively flat. It does slope toward the railroad track a little bit, and there is I think that's a holding pond designed by the city to go in that that upper right-hand corner in the yellow there.
How many parks are in that area, Glenn, let's say within 5 miles of this location?
Ooh, within 5 miles. Crosland Park, Smith Hazel, Eustace Park's close. I don't know if it's within 5 miles or not. We've got a small park just off of Columbia Avenue, which is more than just like a pocket park.
Are you thinking of Osmond Park that has the small walking
trail? Just a small walking trail, not even a playground unit there. Those are the ones that are in that area.
Now, when you talk about the money that we have for sales tax 3 for a north side park, question. How far, I guess what I'm leading up to is I think we're getting maybe a congestion of too many parks. The north side is a pretty large area. I would assume goes all the way out to the 20. I mean, as we...
I-20.
And as we, our expectations with the plans that we have in effect is to work on the road work out there so we don't end up with a development that is as congested as the south side. And I guess the reason I'm mentioning this is, do we want to save our park money for parks out in that area or build another park within several miles of four or five parks already? Are we over-parking that area?
Yeah, the as far as the third round of the 1 cent sales tax money, what the voters approved was land purchase, north side park.
Yes.
And you are correct, the north side transportation study does go all the way out to I-20,
yes.
So it covered a good bit of ground.
Yeah.
But it does, there's no specific geographic place. This was just an offer that showed up, and we wanted to look at it as a potential opportunity because any savings on the land purchase, of course, obviously helps at least an initial phase start.
Well, I understand, but we don't have a good record of savings on land purchases.
And, Dick, most of that land out there is in the county, too. Mm-hmm. So we would hope that the county would do something. Maybe in 30 years, annexations and what have you, it could possibly be in the city limits.
I guess I'm all for accepting anything that's free, but it comes with it, according to Mr. Baldwin's letter, the partnership agreement would include a gift of the parcel of Second Baptist Church-owned land with provisions for the city to purchase the remainder of Second Baptist Church-owned land needed to develop the park. So I guess my concern is I'd certainly in favor of accepting the gift of land, but I would just like more assurance that we need a park in that area, number one, and number two, I'd like to separate the two issues.
Let me just say that one Osmond Park was donated, and if you go to Osmond Park, it is a small park.
There's not much most, there.
Right, there's not anything there at all. It's just a little area, and I was part of that in terms of getting that donation. But just that little small little neighborhood, and several of these parks are not that large. It's up to the city to decide whether they want to purchase the property. It's discretionary. So that's not, they're not asking anyone to sign in stone to say we're going to, am I correct, Reverend Stoddard?
Very correct. As a matter of fact, there are a few of my members who would rather just give you that land for a park and keep the rest for our own personal use because we had originally designed to develop all of that with affordable housing. And the parcel that we're donating, we paid personally $160,000 for the land, but we think it's a better use as a park than as a parking lot. And we don't have the sources to develop it now, so if we could partner with the city to develop it as a park, it's a great contribution to the community. But, you know, you're getting a significant donation. It's not like it's a worthless piece of property. The use is limited, but it's a great piece of property. And as we develop it, it's going to be more and more valuable as we go along. So the 19.93 acres, really that just came as we began to talk about how we could expand the park to include some things that really are missing on that side, like baseball and softball fields. And it was my understanding that might have been something that would be very helpful to Aiken High. And their students, and to have a place where they could practice softball and baseball along with the limited fields that they do have, I thought would be a great contribution to the city as well. But you're welcome to separate the two, and I welcome it as well. So
let me just add, in terms of dimensions, as I stated, some of these parks are so small that it's not much larger than probably double the size of this room, if that large. They're small parks. They're just community and neighborhood parks.
Quick question. Are we restricting ourselves to the park on the capital system improvement? Don't we have some money in there for open space or green space?
We do.
So we could use some of that money.
Well, that's
two different issues.
We've got open space and an open space study that, you know, will have some criteria for determining what constitutes open space for preservation. You've got a specific voter-approved item for land purchase, Northside Park.
Okay.
If I could just mention one other thing. Outside of what you, if we were to develop what's on paper now, we don't have anything like that other than at Citizens Park.
Right.
So there's nowhere else in the city that the city owns. Now, we do use the property behind Schofield that is leased from the school district. But we don't have any other developed athletic fields outside of Citizens Park.
Is this what you consider a neighborhood park? Is this what would be a neighborhood park?
No. 32-33 acres, it's much more than a neighborhood park. I mean, you could see people from everywhere coming to this park. Virginia Acres is a total of about 42, so that would give you some idea of how much property you're talking about there.
I haven't seen your master plan in a long time. I know you presented it to it, but does it in at all include some parks on the south side neighborhoods?
Mm-hmm. Further down the line, it looked at even further south on Whiskey, that as that area develops. It talked about a new park in that area. I want to say it was about 15 acres. Again, I don't know that exact number.
As I think right now, most of the south siders have to go to Odell Weeks, which is a great facility.
Sure.
But as opposed to having some neighborhood parks.
There's no access to it. And I would think
you would have to have an easement to get to this
track. Well, but if it's a permanent park, I wouldn't think an easement would be appropriate. It needs to have a permanent access to it. It could be along the railroad track or something, but I guess I'm a little concerned about having a landlocked piece of ground and not having a permanent access to it.
Well, you could have a signed easement agreement to provide the access.
Yeah, but easements just come back to haunt you. You know, it might be 20 years or 30 several. Years from now, but
we have several that we use now.
How long a period did you get on an easement?
Perpetuity? Yeah. I mean, easement, you just record that at the deed office, you have it forever.
Have it forever?
Until it's, you know, given
okay.
up.
I won't belabor the point, but my past experience with them, something always comes up where your easement needs a new concrete road on it or something like that, and you use it all the time and you got to fix it. That's what happens on an easement, but if it's a permanent access, then it's yours to keep.
Yeah. Doug, let me ask a question. I'm sorry. Were you finished?
Well, I guess it's not a word to anybody, so if we get the land now, there's no road there at all now. It's just woods. Mm-hmm. So it would just sit there for a number of years until the until it's developed and a road would be put in.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of part of my question to be. Suppose we accept this, and then later at some year decide, no, we don't want to put a park there. We want to put a park somewhere else. I mean, there's no harm done.
It depends on what you put there.
But we wouldn't put anything there, maybe. We'd give it back to you, in other words. Is that a possibility? I mean, you might want that land at some point.
We might. That's
I'm just
correct.
Thinking worst case, you know, if we take it and with the discussion here, we don't put a park there, we decide to...
Well, the other option is to table it, and down the road you can revisit it, and at that time we may want to, we may not. Just looking at our overall plan, one of the things we thought would be beneficial would be to have a park there.
I agree. There are a lot of houses and folks around there.
And we're developing more housing in that area.
That's
so
right.
we saw it as a win-win. Honestly, if you don't want to sign the resolution tonight, if you think there are some other things you need to look at, we don't lose anything.
The only thing I would do, Mr. Mayor, I do think if we vote on it tonight, we would need to amend it to show that we would have public access to it. And that could be an easement over through the woods now. But I guess I have a concern of not having any access to it.
And our only concern would be that if your access took up our access, and that would be the only concern we would have, because we wouldn't want to park there if people couldn't get to it. I mean, And I understand what you're saying. So, I mean, it makes logical sense.
Leave it as an open question, have dual access or whatever, but I just hate to have landlocked land and not be able to get to it.
Well, by law, you can't do that. I mean, we can't have landlocked.
No.
It's going to be an access somewhere. It just depends on where it's going to be.
And again, you could make that as, you know, part of the any motion to approve the resolution that, you know, appropriate access be established for the tract.
The resolution as written only addresses the donation of the property.
That's right.
The reason I raised the question about Mr. Baldwin's letter is that from what the church's view seems to be, we'll give you the land, but you got to buy this land. And I'm not sure that's what you're saying.
No, that's not our view.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would support accepting the property. And I would like to see, and I know Glenn has got it someplace in one of his plans, I'd love to see the version of future park development in the city. You know, the map of the, I know you've got it because I think we saw it on that consultant study. The map of the city where all the parks are listed.
We do have that.
Because I'd just like to make sure that there is a genuine need for a park in the area. I mean, we almost can't have too many parks, so to speak, but I'd just like to make sure that that's it's needed in that area, because I'm sensitive to the entire north side area as opposed to what exists now in the north side area, because we hope the rest of that north side area will be developed in future years. So
that's part of your revitalization plan the council adopted.
Yes. Yeah, and I'd hate to use up all of our park money and not have any for the rest of the area.
Should we strike and to authorize an option to purchase the land? Is that what you're suggesting?
Am I suggesting?
Right. Do you have no?
Well, they wanted to separate those two issues, right, but I didn't think it was in the resolution.
It isn't in the resolution. The resolution is fine. I would certainly support the resolution. It was just in the subsequent letter that was attached in our package. So.
And it's at the top of the subject as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. And I think the council's concern is access to the park, which
that's
is
there should be a mutual access.
Yes.
Yes. It'd be mutual. You don't want two roads.
It should be a mutual access.
Yeah. And again, you could put anything in your motion to adopt. We need to have something for you to consider tonight. That's why we drafted it the way we did.
I mean, I'll move approval of the resolution authorizing acceptance of donated property from Second Baptist Church as it's written. That seems very
and mutual access to that property.
And my only concern was is that it would be for recreational use, not other use, and that was.
So, you know what we might want to do then, Mr. Mayor, is let's rewrite this thing, because I agree you have a good point. We need to talk about access to it, and we need to talk about the stipulation that it be used only as a park. I mean, that's not in the resolution. So
you could make a motion to carry it over to the April 23rd meeting so we could get those details.
I would agree with that. Those are two important things that, because this is could be years away from either thing happening.
Pardon? Can this be a first reading? No, can this be a first reading?
Okay, we've got a resolution.
Just resolution. Okay.
So that will only be one reading.
Okay.
Are you
tabling it? Is that what?
We've got
motion to defer it.
Okay.
Second.
Second.
Second. Okay. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Tabling. Okay.
Thank you.
Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor, very much. When do you? Another question. When do you think that you'll get started on your construction?
Money.
Say Monday.
Money.
Oh my.
We're still fundraising.
Thank you, Mr. B. Turn that off. You put the projector on.
Okay, second item. First reading of an ordinance to amend the Aiken Flood Damage Prevention Plan.
Mayor, thank you so much.
We missed you.
The title of this ordinance is an ordinance amending the City of Aiken Flood Damage Prevention Ordinance. As set forth in the materials I provided you, FEMA has done their most recent study, and they review the flood plains for various local government entities. As a result of their flood insurance study, certain recommended changes are contained in your materials. They need to be effective June 19th. 2012, so that folks that have property or structures in the floodplain can obtain flood insurance for them. So this is first reading of an ordinance to amend our Aiken Flood Damage Prevention Plan.
Okay. discussion?
Move for.
Do we have a motion and a second to approve?
Move for approval for this flood damage prevention plan, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay. All right, any discussion?
Yes, absolutely.
One question, probably for Mr. Morris. What happens if we have numerous dams around the area? What happens when one of those breaks? Is that considered in the floodplain?
He's on his way up, Mr. Evans.
I think in the mid-90s we had the experience of, one breaking that's about 30 foot ahead of water and about 20 acres of land, which is a lot of water.
The floodplain is set by the FEMA mapping. So even if an area is below a dam, unless FEMA's elevations show that it's within 100-year floodplain, it would not show as part of the floodplain.
But if it showed in the 100-year plan, it would then the houses downstream of the dam would be covered or could be covered if they fought?
If they were shown within the 100-year floodplain, they would be covered if they purchased the insurance.
Okay. And we need this update to our flood insurance.
Yes.
Excuse me, to our flood damage prevention plan in order for folks to obtain that insurance.
That is correct. Without these changes, FEMA will drop us and will not allow flood insurance coverage.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
I have a question. I've been burned by FEMA in the past changing plans, and I think I've mentioned that at the council before. How do our citizens find out if they have been affected by the recent FEMA flood map?
We have flood maps available in our office that citizens can come look at. Plus, they can actually go on the FEMA website and look at them that way.
Is it as simple as I'm going to call somebody in Public Works and say I live on Belrive Drive, and can you tell me if there's any change to the flood map? Or are you expecting me to go down and, sociology major now, to go down and look at the map and figure it out?
We would have one of our personnel actually help each citizen that comes in. We would request the citizen to come in so that we know they're in the right spot and that we've got the correct home. We have had folks before that would give us descriptions, and the flood maps sometimes are not quite accurate, so that we would have to work with them that way.
This is a major issue for a lot of people who don't find out they're in a flood zone until they buy a piece of property or until they try to renegotiate their loan with the bank and so forth, and then all of a sudden they're told that, oh, you're in a floodplain and you've got to have flood insurance. So,
Do you have
a sense of the changes that FEMA has made to the old plan with the new plan?
That should be in the materials we provided you, Mr. DeWar. There's actually a checklist that they sent to us, and you do have the complete plan. That checklist starts on page 136. So that shows all the updates that were done, and it's itemized in there. Start at page 136, and then the actual plan with the table of contents is attached as well. It's for your reference.
And one thing, Mr. DeWar, that is also required by the city from our planning department is that every piece of property that is surveyed must be surveyed to a Class A survey. That Class A survey, by state law, requires the surveyor that signs and seals that survey to put on there that the property is either in or not in a 100-year floodplain. So that is a state requirement.
And where would you find that? Where would
actually
that
on the plat? If someone's purchasing a piece of property, they would have that plat. Certainly, that their attorney should present to them.
Okay, that's good. And when is the plat updated?
Plats are not updated normally unless a piece of property is sold.
Or if it's refinanced, it just depends on the lender. And again, that information's on public record at the deed office. You've got the floodplain maps that are on file at the city. Folks in the county can go to the county. And then on the actual deed records, which is all publicly accessible, you can find the most recent survey and have a look.
Well, I'm not... Okay, I guess I'll come over to Public Works and take a look at the flood map. My concern is just as I said, FEMA does its thing. I'm not bad-mouthing FEMA, but they do their thing. They make the changes, and I just think it's reprehensible for somebody to find out that they now have to have flood insurance when they refinance. But nobody in the federal government will make it easier for people to find that out. Well, and it's always a lesson learned the hard way.
Yeah, and again, those floodplain maps have always been on file at the Engineering and Utilities Administration building. When I was in private practice, I would go and look at them all the time.
I'll come over with your concurrence and we'll look at them. Thank you. This is just the first reading anyway, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay.
We're changing the ordinance, so it takes two readings.
Any other comments? If not, we've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance to amend traffic management section of the zoning ordinance regarding traffic studies and planned commercial zones. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding the planned commercial zone requirement for traffic studies. Mr. Evans and I have taken a look at this a couple of times. We had at least two applicants within the last year or so that were planned commercial, and the way the ordinance is currently drafted, a traffic study was required, and we didn't really see the benefit in requiring that. That is something that council, in your joint meeting with the Planning Commission, asked them to take a look at. They have done so, and they've recommended specific revisions to Section 4.3.8 of the zoning ordinance, and unanimously adopted those changes. We have provided those to you in your materials on page 179, and it just says the major change is to that section is that a traffic study shall be submitted if required by the traffic management ordinance rather than just carte blanche required, and gives some more discretion as far as when we would have an actual traffic study done. For consideration tonight on first reading is an ordinance to amend the traffic management ordinance regarding traffic studies for planned commercial developments. And Mr. Evans is here to answer any questions that council may have.
My question is it absolutely clear when it's required and when it isn't?
I think Mr. Evans can speak to that.
You know,
The memo from Wilkins Bird, the chairman of the Planning Commission, is also in the materials at page 177. They do set forth their reasons for deleting the requirement of a traffic study.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, sir. The traffic management ordinance is very specific about when you have to do a study and when you don't.
Okay.
Very clear.
I just haven't read it in a long time, so that's why I ask you.
No, wait, don't go away. So why do we need this change?
Well, I mean, the memo doesn't say this, but I thought it did, but in 2003, the requirement for a traffic study in planned commercial was adopted. The following year is when the traffic management ordinance was adopted. So the amendment to the planned commercial zone was kind of the predecessor or the first step towards requiring traffic studies. Once the traffic management ordinance was adopted, there was really, I don't think, any need to keep that provision in planned commercial. It stayed in there. But, I mean, you can keep it the way it is and require the study with planned commercial. Boots, Bridles, Britches, and Lacey Cosmetology are both planned commercial. They had to do traffic studies because of the provision in that we're talking about here. The traffic management ordinance would not have required a study. Mm-hmm. And it seemed kind of, to me, didn't make a lot of sense to require them to do studies if the traffic management ordinance did not require it.
We discussed this issue, as I recall, at mm-hmm. council. Mm-hmm. I think Councilman Wells initially brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern was, at the time, if we take a 5-acre piece of property and we're just going to put a hair salon on that. The idea was, well, the hair salon doesn't require a traffic study, but the concern was the hair salon now goes out of business and a Walmart goes in there, assuming they could build a place within 5 acres. So now what happens? Are we absolutely, positively guaranteed that we'll get a traffic study for a large project that goes into that kind of property?
council would have adopted a concept plan showing particular uses. And the decision of whether to require a traffic study would be based on that concept plan. If they change from a cosmetology school to a Walmart, that would be a change to the concept plan. That would trigger probably a traffic study pursuant to the traffic management ordinance. But even if it did not, you would approve that concept plan. And you could require a study even if the traffic management ordinance did not.
Yeah, I guess this is similar to what the Planning Commission is going to be talking about tomorrow night with Fresh Market at the South Park Shopping Center.
Right. And the thing with Fresh Market is they're actually changing the footprint of the buildings on the track. So that would require the traffic study.
Right. I guess I want to just make sure that we don't get trapped get trapped with approving a planned concept in the beginning and then losing control over it because something else is going to be developed within the same framework. And I guess, for example, if we talk about that five-acre parcel again, I don't think any developer would come to us and just say, hey, here's 5 acres and we want to put a beauty salon in. I mean, they would tell us what they expect to go in that entire five-acre parcel.
That would be the concept.
I hear you saying then is based on what they're telling us, we would then decide yes for a traffic study or no for a traffic study.
Am I correct? You can. Council has that right.
It
can because council approves the concept plan for the track.
If somebody proposed a change to an adopted concept plan and the amount of traffic to be generated by that proposed change was the same as the original concept plan, then it probably wouldn't trigger a study. You'd have to have an increase in the traffic. But even if that were the case, if it came before you and you just didn't feel comfortable about it and you wanted a study, you could require it before approving that new concept plan.
So in the case of Fresh Market, mm-hmm. Who made the decision that you needed to have a traffic study for what they were going to do? Because it hasn't come to council and it hasn't been to the Planning Commission yet.
Fresh Market, because they were changing the buildings that were going to be there and the uses on
the property. So they did it on their own.
Yeah.
Well, the traffic management ordinance required them to do a study.
But it was their decision to change the uses there to expand the square footage that triggered it.
Right. Well, are you both assured that we won't lose control of a planned concept project in the city that changes the type of business from what they started with to what they might end up with? I mean, that's my concern.
Right. And again, the intent is to not have just a carte blanche requirement and cause a developer unnecessary expense. Council still has the right to intervene. The traffic manage ordinance, if you'll excuse me, drives the need for the traffic study, not just the requirement of the zoning ordinance. That's, you're trying to resolve a conflict between the zoning ordinance and your traffic management ordinance. That's the conflict.
And who looks at the traffic management ordinance to make that decision?
Planning Board.
Do you automatically give it to the Planning Commission, or would you make the decision and not give it to them? Because you didn't make them aware of the discussion we had on this very subject when you presented the packet to the Planning Commission.
If it's an amendment to a plan commercial concept plan, if it's a minor amendment, that can be approved by the planning director. If it's a big change, then that goes to Planning Commission and Council. That's the planning director's decision as to whether or not that happens. As far as a traffic study goes, if the traffic study shows the level of service dropping lower than a D, planning director cannot approve it. It's got to be referred to council. If everything is D or better, it can be approved by the planning director.
D. Not C.
Yeah.
And D is defined as?
I can't tell you off the top of my head. It's based on the ratio of volume to capacity, but it's written in the ordinance that D is the threshold. It's got to be a D. Anything worse comes to council.
All right. Well, I mean, I just have that concern. I want to make sure that projects don't get away. I'm not interested in increasing unnecessary costs for developers, but neither am I interested in creating more traffic problems. We've got
And what you're doing, Mr. Dewar, is you're cleaning up a conflict between the zoning ordinance and the traffic management ordinance. That's why we're doing this.
Okay. two comments or questions or go-dos. One of them is we had a discussion here, and I haven't seen the city attorney shaking his head very vigorously in agreement here. I think we need to be sure that your comments were made a month or so ago when I think Mr. Wells brought it up, that we haven't trapped ourselves, and I'm building a little bit on this, but through the city manager's view, we need to look at our notes from that meeting about a month ago or 6 weeks ago. Be sure that we complied with what you said before, where you get 5 acres and somebody puts 1 acre in. We approve that. And what he didn't really say was, yeah, he put in a cosmetology school, one building, and then all of a sudden he makes a college out of it or something else. So we want to be sure that doesn't slip through us.
Well, you know, I mean, your concept plan approval process can be as specific as council wants it to be. If council wants to make sure that the use of a property is limited to certain uses, then you can specify that in your concept plan. And the concept plan can say we are approving use A through F, but if they want to use G through I, they've got to come back and get reapproved by us. Council can make it that specific if you want.
So A through G would have the appropriate traffic to mount for
right.
that. Okay.
Right.
The second
In fact, that may end up, Ed and his staff may, after we've had this discussion, they may look at that and decide that may end up being a standard condition for a planned commercial approval process, where they actually have a condition in there as part of the concept plan that says we're approving it for these uses only, not including these other uses, or you know, something to that effect, so council has that reassurance.
Okay. On page 179, 4.3.7, point A, point E, point 7 is the last paragraph. From the second sentence on down, it gave instructions of what the traffic study should be. Are those written in the traffic management ordinance, Ed? So I don't want to delete something that we need here. Are they the same things written in that ordinance, so it says shall be prepared by qualified engineers, so forth and so on?
Yes, sir.
So it's all that is repeated somewhere?
Yes.
Okay, very good. That's all I had.
Am I nodding appropriately?
Okay, thank you very much for nodding.
Okay, do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So move.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any other questions, comments? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously. And four, resolution to authorize renewing a lease with Brandcliff LLC regarding Wendy's Restaurant Driveway lease.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the resolution is a resolution authorizing renewal of a lease with Francliff Company. Actually, it should read Francliff LLC. The landlord has brought that to our attention, and the actual lease extension agreement has the correct designation in it. That's what we would sign. And let's see, Ms. Rideout, can we pull up that aerial photo? I'm sorry, Mr. Beanbow has that. That's right. I'm sorry, Ms. Rideout. That's exactly right. Mr. Beanbow, if we could just put that up. As he's bringing that image up for the screen, one of the things that we have tried diligently to do is find opportunities to interconnect parcels to keep traffic off of our main arterials in Aiken, such as Pine Log Road and Whiskey Road. And you'll see, if you could just put your pin on that driveway. Yeah, it's actually back. Yes, sir, right there. There's a little driveway from the Wendy's into the entrance into that Staples Shopping Center. Larry Morris negotiated with Fran Cliff 10 years ago to have that driveway put in place. And it's time to renew that lease, and we would ask you to please approve that. We just worked it out with them where we put the materials in to make the driveway, and I think it's worked very well. I've talked with the principal from Francliff, Monty Simmons, and she feels that the 10 years has been very successful. We've negotiated with that downtown and other areas of the city. One connector that comes to mind is from the Target Shopping Center to the mall. And I mean, the first day we had that open, like 1,100 cars went through, something ungodly. So these interconnections really help us with traffic patterns and help alleviate some of the traffic on the main road. So for council consideration is approval of that resolution to allow us to renew the lease.
So that's the easement that we granted in 2002?
Actually, it was granted by Francliff, yes, in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little driveway. It's a little confusing, Mr. Bingo. Just point to the driveway from Wendy's if you could. Yeah, right there.
Okay, very good. Do we have a motion and a second?
I move approval of the resolution authorizing renewing a lease with Francliff LLC regarding the Wendy's restaurant driveway lease.
Okay, I'll second it. Any further discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5, resolution establishing a loan payoff procedure for the Aiken Corporation loan on the Newberry Street office building. Mr. Pierce, please.
Yes, I've had some follow-up conversations with Mr. Brody. The resolution is entitled a resolution authorizing repayment terms of the Aiken Corporation loan from the City of Aiken reserve funds on the corporate office building on Newberry Street. We had at one point talked about potentially trying to credit against other funds that were spent on behalf of the city, but I provided you with an updated resolution. This is just to establish a payoff for the loan on the office building that's on Newberry Street, the half of the building that is owned by Aiken Corporation and operated by Leading Aiken Development, LED. I've had our finance folks look at this account. We do have a payoff figure of $1,871,554.06. Then we have interest on the payment that would have been made by April 10th of $2,098.03. Then we have per diem interest. The closing is scheduled to take place Thursday, April 12th. So the interest accrued through the closing date would be $2,256.12. And council will recall at the end of October of last year, you did allow the refinancing of that loan, and there was an escrow. And that was the escrow between 1% plus the LGIP rate and 4%, which were the terms of the original loan. That deferred interest escrow is up to $25,331.86. That makes a total payoff as of Thursday of this week of $1,901,240.07. And we just seek approval from council to proceed with that closing figure to retire that debt owed by Aiken Corporation and led to the City of Aiken. It's part of a refinance package that they're doing. And I've spoken with Mary Gwynn. She's the closing attorney, and she assures me they are prepared to go forward with closing on Thursday.
Okay. Do you have any comments?
The only thing is, the city manager needs to change the date on the revised resolution. You got the 23rd, and that should be the 9th.
Was that on that corrected?
Revised one, corrected one?
Adopted by council.
Yeah. The corrected
one.
Yeah,
it should be, today.
It'll be the 9th, so let's just.
9th.
Kind of a minor thing.
We would correct
thing,
that. Yeah. No, it's very important. We would correct that.
But that's the only comment I have. So,
thank you, sir. We'll make that correct.
Right. So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got a motion. Second. Okay. Any other comments from anybody? If not, show hands for approval. Passes unanimously. Okay.
We have one more item there. That was
okay, Wayne.
Yeah, wait one second.
Wade Brody, Chairman of the Aiken Corporation. Just like to take this opportunity to say thank you to City Council for agreeing with our vision 10 years ago and working with us during this period of time and funding the loan, which allowed us to build that office building, the to bring 30 jobs downtown and to complete the playhouse facility, and there is no debt, and that location will benefit the city for years and years to come. And I just want to say thank you.
Wade, thank you for all your efforts, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Wade, and everybody for doing that for the last 20 years, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me just say, on a personal note, Wade, you've been beaten up quite a bit. And as you've told me over and over, that when you're being beaten up, somebody else is getting a break. Being housed in that building, I can't tell you the number of people that come into town every day. They eat downtown. They keep the businesses flowing. I think a number of these business owners will tell you about the folks that come into town. And if it wasn't for your vision, and I know you won't accept this independently because you work as a team, your vision and many others, the downtown area would not be thriving as it is. So personal thanks for all you've done and for the vision that you brought. People don't appreciate it, but there are many others that do. Thanks.
I think a lot of us appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you for all the years of effort. Please continue, too. Okay. We got a motion and second. Have we voted on that?
Yes, you did.
We did. Okay, we've got another item.
Yeah, I guess that's two items. One is that, however we do it, I guess I would move to withdraw my request that $2,000 of accommodations tax money be donated, be given to the antiques in the heart of Aiken.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion and second?
Do we need that as a resolution to do, or can we just automatically amend that, Mr. City Attorney?
If council unanimously agrees, council can vote to suspend the rules of procedure to allow you to consider Mr. Dewar's request.
That's what I thought. So we need to do that first.
Is council unanimous in that agreement?
Yes.
Yes.
Show of hands, please.
Yes.
Show of hands. Okay. Passage unanimous.
And then the motion would be to adopt Mr. Dewar's proposed amendment to the last council meeting where the accommodation tax was discussed, and he had proposed to add that line item to the antiques in the heart of Aiken budget request.
And that's your motion, Mr. Dewar?
That's my motion, exactly.
Second.
I'm hungry.
Do we have a second? Did we have a second?
I second.
Okay, I thought so. Okay, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously.
And I have one last question. Do we have, Mr. Pierce, is there an existing list of open permits in the city? I know permits are good for like 6 or 7 years or something, and they can be renewed, but do we have a database of existing permits that we have approved that have not yet been
built? Ed's office has permits. He knows what the permits are that have been applied for.
The building permits that are currently open, there's no CO issue.
Yes.
We can get that for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Now, don't
make
we
a note of that to, and get it out.
We suspended the rules. We have to.
No, you're good.
You're good.
It was just for that one item.
Okay. All right. And now, don't forget, we still have the boards and commissions.
Absolutely.
Do we
have any new appointments or nominations?
That's on my list right here.
Yes, I do. I reappoint Mr. Channing Jones to the Housing Authority.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'd also like to recommend the reappointment of Susan Victor to the Accommodations Tax Committee. And I'd also like to recommend the reappointment of Scott Rains to the Recreation Commission.
He helped with the horses and courses. He did a great job for us.
Okay. Mayor, I have
the Arts Commission, I'm sorry.
I have several. One is the Senior Commission, Helen Simpkins, reappointing her to the Accommodations Tax Committee, Angela Key, and to the Arts Commission, Joanne Saunders.
Okay. Any others? Okay. Well, looks like that's it then. Huh?
No, Mayor, I'm sorry.
I have one item
that we added to the agenda. The Cumbie Center to Assist Abused Persons. Let's see. April is apparently National Sexual Assault Month. They want to do their fourth annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes Walkathon. That's going to start at the courthouse and end up at the Festival Center on Newberry Street. They'd like to place teal ribbons on the light poles. Their letter said downtown Aiken, but when I spoke with Ms. Rouse, actually they want to put them at the Festival Center and then do a balloon release at the fountain, and that's something we've done in the past, but we would just ask for council approval for that installation.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
I so move.
Second.
Okay, discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Now, does anybody have anything else?
60 Minutes last night had a segment on polo when they mentioned Aiken, and I'm just curious. It has nothing to do with city council business. There was a man named Owen Reinhardt who apparently is world-renowned for Where is his property
lives
located?
Right outside of town. Going to Orangeburg?
Langdon Church Road, right on the corner of that.
On which church?
Langdon Church Road, right at the corner of that and 302.
That was a nice
302 going toward Orangeburg, you know, that way.
That was a nice segment on Aiken. I did not realize he was here.
We've got another polo player on the other side of the road.
Adam Snow. The other side.
It's about equal to him.
Wow.
They're 8 or 9 or...
Hmm. Mr. Mayor.
Sometimes 10.
I could. Reverend Slaughter, I want to apologize. You've been under the weather, and you're out and moving about. We've been prayerful with you, so we're glad that you're moving about, you look healthy, and we're thankful that you're back on the move again.
Absolutely. Thank good to see you. Okay. We are adjourned. Did you say that...